Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Powerful Podcast here, the number one new business and podcast where we show all sides of the truth. This is the show where you're going to get every issue from both sides. We are going to tell you our opinion and we're going to let you decide. I am tired of one-sided media that is only trying to sway us in a world where there's so much wars and racism and fake news and misinformation. And we're here. So this is our first Facebook Live, but obviously you can find every episode we've done. This is our 10th episode in the last 5 weeks. And you can go to Spotify, iTunes, Google, and all the other platforms as well. Please share it, comment it, like it.
And leave a five-star rating.
Yes, and a five-star rating. I am JT Fox. I am the world's number one wealth and business coach, serial entrepreneur of over 50 companies and brands. We are currently doing business in 53 different countries, but we are in 87 countries ourselves. Right here is Pac, a.k.a. my CEO, a.k.a. Francie, one of the most powerful women I know, and she is here to add some color commentator back and forth with me, as we have done a couple weeks ago doing my show and her show, and because we couldn't be in the same city, and the public, the masses have spoken, the loyalists, the globalists have said, you know what, we are much better together as well. So the idea is we're gonna go over a bunch of issues here. We are live audience right now. Next podcast we are going to do is we are going to do in front of 2,500 people from 87 countries in a couple days. Mega success, the biggest event. So Francie, take it away. What are we going to go?
Yes. So the first topic I want to start with is one that I think is really interesting because we talk about this all the time. But recently, Donald Trump Jr. just published his first book that he's ever published. And it made the bestsellers list. And he's getting a lot of pushback for making the bestsellers list because there is what they call a little dagger under his name, what denotes that the author published mass quantities of his book.
Mass purchase.
Yes.
Or just a reframe. So there's a New York Times bestselling list as well. And if you look by each name, if they have a little like dagger next to
it, looks like a cross. I don't know why they call it a dagger, because it looks like a cross. And it will be, so it'll have the name of the book. It's not the initial list, but when you click into the list and it'll have like the top 10 in that category, it'll have the name of the book, the author, a brief description, a button where you can actually click to buy. And right above that button, if you see a little cross, it's actually called a dagger.
And that was a very long explanation. I could have done that in 10 seconds, but that was very well in detail.
It was detailed.
Like, I was about to explain it, and then you just interrupted me. Like,
I did.
How is this now live? You're interrupting me?
I don't think you have actually ever looked to see what it looks like.
I did, because I looked it up when they did it with him. And so the bottom line is they're trying to say that a large quantity of book was purchased, and that's why it's number one, because a lot of people purchased the book as well. So what's the issue that you want to discuss? First of all, is it right to do that, I imagine?
So one, should he do it? Should he not do it? Two, is this really even newsworthy?
Well, it is newsworthy because it is Donald Trump Jr. And if it was, you know, Vice President Biden or his son or, you know, let's say Tony Robbins has had that. Tim Ferriss has had that, from my understanding.
And that did not make news.
And here's the thing. I don't think there's nothing wrong. Like, for example, Tony Robbins, if he buys, because it needs 50,000 copies to be the New York Times bestseller. You buy 50,000 copies and you have your clients buy it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Many people, and we know this because we're in this industry, people have bought their way to the New York Times bestseller. And that's just the way it works. And at the end of the day, you know, it's like a, you know, if you like Donald Trump Jr., Don Jr., be like, yay, congratulations on being number one. And if you don't like him, then you're going to say, he bought his way. Nobody would buy this book. They only did that as well. And I think this just goes to show the decisiveness of the world that we live in here today. At the end of the day, he still became number one. It's not illegal what he did. And by the way, how do we know that he did it? He orchestrated. What if another body, let's say the Republican committee, said, we are going to buy the books? And by the way, they didn't know that it wouldn't be number one. I know a lot of people have purchased the book as well. So he's being like attacked for something that it's not. Now, on the other hand, people are saying, well, the optics of it as well. How is that fair where you have, let's say, a publisher who will spend $5 million to promote a book, let's say? right? And have all the Ellen and Oprah shows and Howard Sterns, and because that person has that connection and platform, they become number one because of all the show, where the little person may not have that exposure, you know? And so there's you know, you take your advantage in business where you can get it. So I don't think, you know, my personal opinion is that if this was Don Jr., it would not be news.
And it wasn't Don Jr.
What?
If it was not Don Jr. Well, it wouldn't be news because there's currently 7 other people on the New York Times bestseller list. 3 of those are number one in other categories that all have daggers, and not one person is talking about
that. And Pac is just given a dagger, and nobody talks about that as well, and it's the world too. I mean, you just mentioned the world Trump, and people are like, you start convulsing, right?
This yes.
How they are. So again, who cares? You know, listen, even if you don't like him, congratulations on your number one book. I'll never read it. Or congratulations on your number one book. I love it, but I love you, but I won't buy your book. Like, who cares? I mean, I think as a society is that everyone loves a story on the way up.
Everybody's looking for something.
And then as soon as you're up, they want to see you go down. That's the American way. In other countries, they never want to see you grow at all. So that's the difference. At least in America, we're like, it's much more cool for you to fall from a 12-story building than never climbing the stairs. Like, people want you dead before you climb the stairs.
They want to cheer for you on the way up, and then once you get there, all they want to do is tear you down.
Yeah, but in Europe or Australia
or
other places,
it's all poppy syndrome. They don't want to cheer for you
at all. So at least here, we're like, it's much more cool for you to fall like, splat, than and the other way around. So, all right, next topic.
No falling, no splatting. all right, next topic. In China right now, they are actually banning video gamers under the age of 18 from playing video games from between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. Also limiting play to 90 minutes a day, Monday through Friday. Now, here's what I want to talk about. Do you think this is just too much involvement of, you know, government getting involved and trying to put parameters on parenting and children? Do you think it's good that they're limiting the hours?
There's a big issue here, and multiple of this. Number one, our parents say that video games used to like poison our brains, right? Mm-hmm. And now there are gamers who are making millions of dollars. It's literally become one of the fastest growing industries, right? The gaming industry as well. Mm-hmm. So what happens is more and more people are doing it, and listen, when I grew up, I loved video games because I was like an introvert that would talk to people, but I don't think it made me smaller. I also too would like, right now, I'd love to play video games, but I don't, because like I'm the type of person that like I'll play like the Madden, the football game, and I want to know like, who do I pick? Who do I draft? Who's injury? I mean, these are such big pressures, and I feel like I'd let you delegate some of these responsibilities as to how to manage my team because I don't like losing, and you would end up running the team for me, and I'd be like, Pack, what's up with my fantasy team? I need you to draft this
player. This is why we don't play fantasy.
Correct. That's right. Why we don't play fantasy football. But also, but here's an interesting fact. Now everybody's trying to justify that video games are good and people are getting rich. Well, the odds of getting on a super team, okay, right, a video super game team, like these big things, is less than 1%. You have an easier chance of getting into Harvard than it actually getting on a video game team. But people have this illusion, I can play games. I think the problem is that I think it's not just you play an hour. People are playing 6-7 hours. I think it's creating that social interaction. I don't like the fact, and of course people are calling in the middle of Facebook Live. And they're having that social.
That was an important phone call.
It was an important phone call. It was an important phone call, I know. This is more important, you're more important. So I think now we've said this. I really think everything in moderation, but it's not done in moderation. But when the government starts banning things, like China's banned crypto, people are still doing crypto. I don't think that's gonna do anything and curb anything. You know, government interfering, I think it's the role of the parents to regulate, right, not the thing. But I think people are getting into, it's a big business, but I don't know, like, I think spending too much time playing video games cannot be good for kids.
But
I'll tell you why, a lot of the CEOs are not letting, big CEOs of tech companies are not letting their kids, they're limiting the number of iPad time, they're limiting number of screen time, they're limiting these things because it's not good for them. And I don't think it's good for the future of the youth.
Well, what's coming out now is there's a lot of studies how it's changing brain development in children. So children at a young age where they are video games, iPads, phone, you know, it's put you in front of a screen, how that's actually changing how...
Well, but now, like, for example, in Canada and some places, like, they've legalized marijuana, and I was downtown Toronto the other day, and you could literally smell it downtown. Chicago, where one of the places I now live... they're about to legalize it where you can buy it downtown and people just do it like it's nothing. All these things cannot be good for the future development of the youth because of the temptation. Like, if people want to do drugs, that's fine. But when you're exposing it to 16, right. 17, you're like 18
well,
year
old. Well, the interesting, it's funny you bring that up. I know a few people who have medical marijuana here in Florida. And you wouldn't believe, so the doctor can prescribe it, but you have to go to the dispensary and the dispensary suggests what you should take. You wouldn't believe the marketing these dispensaries put out. 3-for-1 Veterans Day sale and like the amount of promotion behind it where it's like you would never see a promotion behind some type of a prescription drug.
Well, let me ask you.
Do you get what I'm saying?
For example, would you ever... I got asked to invest in a marijuana business. And I know I'd make a lot of money. I think I'd be a phenomenal drug dealer. I'm telling you. Hold on.
There's a difference between investing in medical marijuana company and being a drug dealer.
It's no longer medical marijuana because it's legal in places. It's recreational. Right? Like in California, it's recreational. Canada's recreational. Chicago and other places all over. So it's not just medical anymore. It's only medical where it wasn't recreational. Now it's being sold like in stores, like anywhere else. So let me ask you a question. So I have never done drugs. I've never smoked. I've never had a drink. I don't care if people do. It's never been my thing. You know, I like to be high on life, not high on a substance. But if other people do it, that's their own choice. I respect that. But would you ever invest? I don't believe in drugs. I don't like drugs. Would you invest in a business that can make you a lot of money, but you don't believe in it? Like, for example, would you, let's say, put $1 million into a marijuana business? You don't like marijuana. You don't like the smell of it. You don't believe it. You don't like what it does. But would you put $1 million if it makes money? Or because you don't believe in it, you shouldn't invest in it. What would you do?
So I think if it's something that you don't believe in or...
But it's going to make money.
You're... opposed to, I think there's a lot of ways you can make money. So I just think that comes down to, at the end of the day, there's a lot of different ways you can make money. There's a lot of different things that you can invest in, and you should be able to sleep at night and feel good about what you're investing in, right? Like, I mean,
my mindset, if you smoke a joint before you go to bed, you'll sleep better.
Would you go and invest in a...
I'll tell you my view. If I was starting out, or I'm growing my business and I have an opportunity to make a lot of money and I don't have that much money, or I'm building my wealth, I would do it because it's a good opportunity. Now that I have a lot of money, I wouldn't do it because to me now it's on the principle. So you see what I mean? So if this was like 6, 7...
I think there's a lot of ways,
But there isn't.
You can invest in real estate.
Yeah, but first of all, the thing is hot now...
But it's still risky because let's look at all the people that we know that are involved in that industry. None of... It all looked like a great opportunity to make a lot of money, and none of it actually panned out because there's so much regulation, and the only way to really make money is if you're the grower, the farmer, and the seller, which they regulate all of it to where you can't do all of those things. That's why people still do it illegally, because that's where you
actually
make money.
But that was like, for example, the hotels in Miramar, like the Beverly Hills and the Dorchester, I believe, and in London are owned by the Miramar, and how they treat people there, apparently. And people like, I wouldn't stay there. And then people boycotted because George Clooney came out. But now it seems to have gone away. Nothing's changed. People still go in there. So if you don't believe in the ownership, let's say someone owns the hotel, should you not go because you don't like that person or it's the hotel? It's a very gray area. And it becomes an ethical dilemma in so many different reasons.
I think everyone's open to make their own decision. All right. Recently, Matt Damon self-admitted, so this was a self-admission, that he is the dumbest actor of all time. That was his own words, calling himself the dumbest actor of all time.
Why.
And the reason being, James Cameron had actually offered him the lead role in Avatar, which he turned down. And when he offered it to him, he offered him a 10% stake in the profit of Avatar, which equated to about $250 million.
So he could have made $250 million.
One movie. And so he says that he's now claiming he is the dumbest actor of all time and, you know, knows nothing about business, makes poor business decisions. What I think I want to talk about is, you know, he is an actor. That is his trade. We've met some celebrities that actually are very, very smart business people and mm-hmm. you would never know it. Mm-hmm. And we've met other ones that say, you know, I have a team of people and they make those decisions. So do you think he has the right team of people that helped him make those decisions? Do you think he personally turned it? Do you really think it was a bad decision or do you think?
Well, James Cameron was
hindsight.
In hindsight, James.
It's always 2020. Right.
James Cameron had a very big reputation. But one might argue that John Travolta, who we know and we've had our events, did the movie Battlefield, and people still talk how bad it is. Matt Damon is a very successful A-list actor and has to protect his brand. He's worth over $100 million, I'm sure, and if not, at least over $75 million with all the movies his past. Could have made more? But a lot of, it's like, for example, why you tell people, would you rather make a commission now?
That's what I'm gonna say. Right?
Would you rather make a commission now or get a percentage of the deal later? Most people want what's now and what's safe. And maybe what James Cameron did is because of the production of the movie was so expensive, he'd be like, I'm just gonna give
you
a little bit. I'll pay you on the back. I'll give you a little bit of base, if not as well. And in hindsight, I mean, the movie business, first of all, a lot of movies don't make it. This is first thought, they don't. They lose money, they don't make the money as well. So of course, in hindsight, you know, and no one knew Avatar would be the movie it is today before. I think he was very cautious and protective of his brand, but it's the same thing too. You know, my billionaire partner said to me in another business, you know, you can't be a billionaire if you think like a multimillionaire. And so what he did is he thought like a multimillion-dollar Hollywood actor, he didn't think like a billionaire, and that's why it didn't happen. I know why I'm extremely wealthy. But I know why Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates and Steve Jobs were wealthier than me, because they have taken a lot more risks. Like for example, for me, I have a 50% rule where my money's safe. 40% has to be secured by, you know, 6 to 14% return. And 10% of my money, I can lose it all. Well, people like Elon Musk and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, they're 90% in and risky and 10%. And that's why they take a massive amount of risk for massive benefit. But if it goes the other way, you can go broke. So it really depends on risk tolerance level. And so, you know what? He still made money. He's still doing that. If he had not been an actor, like Stallone will say, someone offered me, and he said this at our event, if someone offered me the role of Rocky, they wanted to give it to Burt Reynolds. And yep. They just wanted to buy my script. I said, no. So rather than taking the $300,000 up front, he went all in. Now you know Sylvester Stallone wouldn't be where it is without that. It would have gone to Burt Reynolds. Everything is risk to reward in life. And then you got to decide, right? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, decide. 95% of every decision you make in 5 seconds will be the correct one.
Are you more likely to take an upfront fee or on the back end?
Now I would be in the back end because of a lot of wealth. Mm-hmm. But back then where he is as well, yeah, I mean,
he didn't need the money back when Avatar.
Well, Avatar's a long time ago, over 10 years ago. And by the way, I don't know, Goodwill Hunting. It'd be very interesting, but he still wasn't, you know, you have to be very productive because it takes a lifetime to build a brand and 5 minutes to destroy it. You don't want to be that one hit wonder, that bad movie. Because once
you think it was an animation thing, like he didn't want.
Well, it was hard to understand. It'd be like there'll be aliens and people and blue people, like the pitch on that. Like, and they'll be like.
I wonder what the pitch was.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What the pitch was too. So, but for the record, we offered like $500,000 for Matt Damon to come to our event. You know, and his agent said, don't even bother because he's not even going to want to do it or anything like that. So he's doing just fine. And we're here to report on that as well.
All right. The next topic I want to talk about is Taylor Swift recently came out. She is being honored at the AMAs for her artistry over the past 10 years, wanted to perform kind of like a medley of all of her songs. Earlier this year, Scooter Braun and Scott bought over the...
Scooter Braun is Justin Bieber's agent, yes. Usher's.
Bought the record label that Taylor Swift was a part of. She came out saying she cannot perform her earlier music that the label has hold of because they're basically holding it hostage.
Well, you want to.
They came out saying we were in talks, we were getting to a really, really good place, and that's not at all what happened. I don't know why Taylor would say that.
They also say that they're owed money that they still haven't paid the royalties that they're owed as well.
And here, she's saying, so this it's, I wanted to bring this up because this is a very, she said Taylor is known for going out.
Well, let's call Taylor and see what she says.
Going out. Do you have her number? I don't have her number. You probably have her number.
No. I tried.
Going out and.
That one didn't work.
Like enraging her fan base, yes, to go and attack people. Correct. So is this a strategy she's using, yes, to try and strong arm them?
Listen, on one hand, of course, she wants to play her hits. But at the end of the day, the music business, when she started, she does not own the rights to her music. Okay. And by the way, her rights or music were sold, I believe, for $300-600 million. I think it's 300 million, something like that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, from what I understand and what I read, is that she had the opportunity to buy it and she passed.
Well, that's where, that's another one where she's saying she was never given the opportunity. They're saying she was given the opportunity and passed on the opportunity.
Well, bottom line, like first of all, as a businessman, the business of Scooter Braun of owning, he spent a lot of money on this catalog. He has the right, just like when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog and Sony and Paul McCartney, they got outbid and didn't want it. And now looking back, that it was the rights of controlling your rights and your music and being controlled. Wealth equals control. But when you start up, you have no leverage. Here's an interesting fact about leverage. Sylvester Stallone says to me, he makes zero money off of Rocky. You know, like all the Rocky stuff I have and the belt and the memorabilia, the movies, all he gets paid. He had no rights. It's all owned by the studio. They own that right as well. So every time you see any Rocky, he gets nothing of that as well. But now the expendable, he has rights and right, other things as well. So sometimes you have to sacrifice. And at the end of the day, you're at the leverage. And Scooter Braun's responsibility is not the Taylor Swift. It's a business. And at the end of the day, he's going to do what's best for his business, for the investors of the group that he put together as well. And you're right. She's enraging the fan base.
Now, do you think she
I think she should call me. And I'll tell her what to do. I'll
give her advice. You'll coach her through
I'll coach her. Okay. I'll be like, you know what? Come to Mega Success. Let's talk about it. Bring your guitar. It'll be easier. Maya, do you mind just coming playing one song while we're there? You know, just work.
You know, we'll make it a, we'll turn all the cameras off so nobody knows you even played one of the songs that you are now not allowed to play without being fined for. My thing is, you're it's a business deal, right? Yes, so you're working out the terms of a business deal. Do you then share the terms with the world so they can enrage?
You
got to keep it.
Correct, yeah.
You got to keep it.
If she wasn't Taylor Swift and she said something, nobody would care. But she's got a lot of fans and people message it. And by the way, that is not going to sway Scooter Braun one bit. He's been around these talents. I'm sure Justin Bieber's high.
Well, now she's even like putting out there like tweeting like help for Carly and like some of the other artists that he manages, trying to now position that he's going to take advantage.
That would be like if you're trying to put a revolt against me, so that you can get your rights to your amazing footage when you speak for us.
I'm gonna go live and
you're gonna go live?
No, I do remember an event where I was speaking and I asked a question about it and somebody was like, "No, we don't wanna waste tape on you."
Ooh.
That wasn't you.
That was not me. I never said that. That's a mic.
You know
drop.
Exactly who said that.
Yeah, that person's now broke.
Yes.
Go, next topic.
Covering my shoes. So last topic I wanna talk about, the I actually saw this on the news.
Elmo just made an appearance.
Aww. This is a special Elmo, too.
Yes, that's the very special Elmo.
Very right. Special Elmo. Okay, last topic. I saw this on the news a couple of days ago, and I literally was, Brent and I were watching the news, and we were in shock and amazement at this story that I can't believe this actually happened. For immigrants that are actually in Seattle, which is a sanctuary city, if you are an immigrant to this country and you're not here legally, you cannot be deported if you are aiding an investigation of an open crime. Okay? So they actually staged a crime, a break-in at a restaurant staged with where they had actually physically like harmed people and sexually assaulted people. So they called the cops on themselves, not knowing, like not thinking it was themselves. So the cops would come, open the investigation. They were the witnesses to aid in the crime, so they could not be deported in helping an active open investigation. And because they were the ones that had actually committed the crime, it would essentially never be closed because they would never catch the criminals. So then they actually get caught that they have staged all this. It was a fake crime, get sent to jail. However, because it was in a sanctuary city, ICE is not contacted and they will not, still will not be deported. How is that even possible? I was literally watching the news and could not believe
that's why I don't watch the news. I watch the powerful. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, you know, people are always going to find an angle. I mean, how many people we've heard of, like, you have a car.
But they were in a sanctuary city where they wouldn't be deported anyway. I know, so why go through all of, why even go through all of that rigmarole?
People do stupid things. And at the end of the day, it's a problem. It's never going to be solved. Here's the point. No one chooses where they were born. Nobody chooses the color of their skin. I don't even believe we choose our own religion. Our parents choose it for us. And so I don't understand why people are racist or against people's religion or skin color, because it's not like they had a choice. And so that's what really makes me upset. And at the end of the day, people will try whatever angle. And I guess being in America and living in America is probably better than where they are now. People do anything. And the problem is that the moment you mention immigration, you know, people, like, they say, oh, you know, we should let them all in. Well, nobody wants to talk about how they pay for it. Right. And then other people say, you know what? They can come in, but they have to do it legally. But then they'll be like, how can you get there legally when there's no process? And other people say, I want no immigrants as well. And so all of these issues are dividing. They've been problems that have been around all over the world. No one really knows how to handle the Syrian refugees and some of the refugees in other continents like Africa and things like that. It's not going to get easier. I think it's going to get worse. I think it polarizes country. I think it incites racism as well. But there's a problem. And what people do is going to keep kicking the can down the road, just like the national debts. I mean, what America's now has got, like a 19 trillion national debt or some insane number like that. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. And people will do anything, you know, to stay somewhere and do something and be creative. And then they'll close the loopholes as well. So I'm not sure how the hell we're supposed to debate this issue.
I
don't know what you want me to debate.
Well, I mean, risk to reward here, right? So you stage all of that and now they're in jail.
I know, but that's like, out of all the things we could talk about, that's what you want to talk about?
I couldn't believe that's how people
I watch a lot of things on the news, but that doesn't mean I'm going to report it on the powerful. Like, you're asking, like, how people with very little education, extreme poverty, have nothing, will do anything to stay in America.
Where they were staying anyway.
No, but not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, because if technically they're not going to be contacted, but if ICE finds them, then they can deport them. So they may not be contacted, but it's not like they're immune from deportation. So again, desperate people do desperate things. That's how we're going to end it as well. And in closing, we'll talk about this maybe on the next show, but the IPO of the Saudi oil company, the company is now valued at $1.3 trillion, which would make it the most valuable company in the world. They're trying to raise $3 billion for some cash flow and things like that. They think it'd go all the way up to $25 billion, making it the largest IPO of all time. And it's very interesting. You had all these issues on Saudi Arabia. Now nobody's talking about it as much. And it's very interesting to see these issues going in and who's going to invest. They're also asking all the billionaires in the country to invest, so they're putting pressure on them as well. So it'd be very interesting.
Probably not asking, they're probably demanding.
And so very interesting about what's happening in the world. It'll be very interesting to look at that side of that issue as well. And would you invest in a company if it's going to make you a lot of money if you don't believe in their views and principle? Or at the end of the day, if it makes money, then you can do whatever you want with that money. These are the issues that we talk about it as well. So was that a good show, everybody?
Yeah.
So, keep on listening. If this is the first time you're listening, all the other episodes, they're all current. We did not talk about WeWork today again, but we will talk about WeWork at Mega Success. So the next broadcast is going to be in front of 2,500 of the world's most successful people, 38 plus celebrities, 87 countries, Mega Success. And all of you, if you'd like to know more about how I went from like negative 34,000 to building a global empire. Pick up my book, millionaireunderdog.com, millionaireunderdog.com. That's the only way you can pick up my book. Why? Because I don't want to give all my money to Amazon, 70% of it, and I don't want to give the publisher, and I don't want to buy all the copies to then resell it at a loss to my clients. You want it, you can get it directly. How to start, grow, and scale any business. So much more. And if you ever want to see me live anywhere in the world for free, jtfox2xlive.com. This is the pack. This is me. Amazing audience here. Have yourself a great day wherever in the world. Share this show. We'll see you at the top. And remember, success is not a matter of chance. It's a matter of choice. Go out there and be great.
And don't forget to like, share, and leave us a 5-star review.
That should be like a